We're talking about worldliness. And when I was so rudely interrupted by the end of chapel yesterday, we were in the process of trying to talk about the world and to define the world. And we had found so far two uses that are relevant to our discussion of worldliness. The first use of the term world, and we're not distinguishing in any major way between the use of the word cosmos and the word ion here. The first use of the term world refers to the imminent present earthly order in contrast with the transcendent permanent heavenly order. Simply, the way things are on earth. There is an order, there is a system to the world, there is an order in the created world, there is even more of an order in the human world. We are brought together in our various relationships through a variety of mechanisms in politics and jurisprudence, education, entertainment. There are a whole bunch of spheres that define our relationship to one another in the humanly constructed social order. The basic use of the word world simply refers to that order, this temporal order that exists that we're all part of. We really have no choice but to participate in it. It's where we are. It's where we live. The second use of the term is similar but adds an additional step. It assumes that that present order is there, but then looks at that present order more or less as all that is, so that the world, in this second use of the term, represents the present concerns and perspectives that people have without consideration of or reference to the transcendent and the eternal and the heavenly. Now, see, this begins to move us from a pretty neutral use of the term world in the direction of an ethical use. Now, there is not yet, in this use of the term, an element of overt rebellion, but there is an element of depravity, because it is our depravity that leads us to neglect or to leave out of accounting God and his ways. So that when people think about this world as an end in itself, or when people reason about this world and the things of this world without looking at it from God's perspective, that represents a second use of the term world. Paul tells us in Romans 1 that depraved people don't like to think about God and his ways, so they leave God out of their reckoning. That results in a skewed perspective that is always deficient. And we looked at some passages, particularly in 1 Corinthians, that talk about the disastrous effects, the disastrous consequences of leaving God out of reckoning in any reasoning about the way that things are. In fact, let me sort of close this use, or our discussion of this use of the term world, simply by referring to 1 Corinthians 3:18. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seemeth to be wise in this world, let him become a fool that he may be wise. Then verse 19, for the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God, for it is written, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness. By the way, you've got both terms used here in verse 18. If any man among you seems to be wise in this world, that's ion right there. Verse 19, for the wisdom of this world, that's cosmos, is foolishness with God. This is one of the passages that leads me to be unwilling to really distinguish too sharply the usage of those terms. They're overlapping here, probably slightly different emphasis, but still a significant overlap. And I think what Paul is saying here is that you may have a wisdom, or probably a better word for us would be a shrewdness, a canniness that is dictated by the assumptions of the present order. But because the assumptions of the present order neglect God, no matter how good the reasoning is, no matter how shrewd it is, because a fundamental assumption and a fundamental perspective has been left out of reckoning, it's foolishness. And we've got to abandon all of that for a wisdom that will, from the world's point of view, that is to say, from the perspective of finite, earthbound reasoning, will seem to be folly. We look like foolishness from the world's point of view because we are reasoning from a reference point that is outside this space-time order. On the other hand, if you're reasoning from that outside perspective, then those who have restricted themselves to the present order look like fools. From God's point of view, the wisdom of this world is foolishness, not because it isn't good reasoning, but because it's reasoning from flawed assumptions. By the same token, if you're locked in that mindset and you look at a genuinely spiritual person, and by spiritual I mean a person whose mind is controlled by spiritual concerns, by eternal concerns, they are going to act, behave, and think in ways that seem perfectly ridiculous from within the narrow perspective of temporal concern. I think perhaps that's why Titus 2:12 says that the grace of God teaches us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, Ion. In other words, the whole difference in perspective is to be obvious just by the way that we live. The way that we think works itself out in the way that we live. Our manner of life is dictated by a different set of perspectives, assumptions, concerns. That should produce dispositions and behaviors that will stand out among people whose perspectives, assumptions, and concerns are dictated by the purely immanent and temporal. They should look at us and they should say, there's a difference. Because everything about us rings differently given the perspective that we carry with us. Now, all of that is what I'm going to call the intermediate use of the term world. We have a neutral use of the term world, which simply refers to the present order. And we're part of the present order. We're, at the moment, locked here. There's short of suicide, there's no way to leave and go anywhere else. Okay? There is this middle use of the term that isn't yet a fully ethical use, although it is freighted with ethical implications. The world as restricted to present concerns. But then there is a fully ethical use of the term as well. This world isn't just a bunch of objects and events. This world is a collection of systems that really come together in one grand order or pattern or system, not always consistently, not always harmoniously, in fact, quite often inharmoniously. That's why we have wars and fightings. But nevertheless, there is this big system, much of which is humanly constructed. Now, that system isn't in and of itself wrong or bad. That's the first use of the term. However, if we regard that system as all there is, if we regard that system as ultimate, then we are already moving in a disastrous direction. There's one further step that people take that turns this terribly disastrous, and that is that depraved people seize this system or components of this system, and they use the system, they manipulate the system or these components in order to protect their own depravity, to protect expressions of their depravity, or to advance their agenda that rejects God, his ways, his law. Okay, now here we have the world in the fully negative sense of the term, the manipulation of the present order in order to co-opt it for perspectives that are overtly opposed to God and his ways. The order is already there. It's not the order that's bad, per se. It's not the system that's bad, per se. But when depraved people get a hold of the system, They manage to turn it into a weapon that can be used against God. They turn it into a way of protecting their sinful interests. They turn it into a thing that is opposed to God, and because it's opposed to God, it also turns out to be opposed to God's people whenever we reflect God's character and God's concerns. This, I think, is the sense of the word world that occurs in Scripture in its most negative respects. And I think the way that we get from the middle use to the fully negative use is probably defined best by 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 4. Peter says, "Whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be takers of the divine nature," and then notice the closing clause, "having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust." Now, it's not that the world as a system is necessarily corrupt in and of itself. I think the system would have been there had there been no fall at all. God's plan was never for human beings to live in disorder and disarray. There was always going to be a system. God hardwired into us his image, which means that we exercise dominion, we bring order out of chaos. All of that would have happened, and it would have been turned in a holy direction. Because of the fact that the fall did occur, however, something else happens. First, we begin to neglect God in our vision of the system, but then we move the step beyond that. Peter says that there is corruption in the world through lust. In other words, we have inserted, we, human beings in general, humanity in general, has inserted corruption into this system through lust, and I take that "through" to mean by virtue of our lust. In other words, because we are seeking to protect our sinful desires, we have put corruption into the system so that the system itself shields us and allows us to do things that we might not otherwise be able to do or even necessarily want to do, dare to do. It's kind of like the way the internet is developing. As you know, those of you who are a little bit older and you can remember when there wasn't an internet, and then you remember how it came along and how it has developed. One of the phenomena, and by the way, I am not saying that the internet is sinful. In fact, I don't think it is. I'm all for the internet as far as that goes. But you watch the way that people take it and use it. You have some weirdo over here who's got this really kooky thing that he believes in, and he's thought this for years, but he's kept it to himself because everybody thinks he's a kook. But then on the internet he discovers some other weirdo over here who's got a similar kooky idea, and some, you know, probably down in the Middle East or South America, some other weirdo who shares the same idea. And now there are three of them, and it's like they've discovered each other, and wow, this technology provides a mechanism for them to encourage each other in their weirdness. Okay, this is how people use the mechanisms of the world in their sinfulness and in their depravity, so that the world actually becomes not only a barrier against divine prosecution. They think they're shielding themselves from God's law, but the world actually becomes a mechanism through which they encourage one another in their lusts. Things that they might have been ashamed of, they now let show freely because they've discovered there are a whole bunch of other people who love the same things. And there's a way that they can do them together. And so people manipulate the systems of this world because of their lust. Now, we already saw yesterday that the devil is the ruler of this world, the prince of this age. He has authority within this world. So obviously, the devil is attempting to shift the focus as well. Human neglect of God is shifting the focus, but now there is an overt attempt on the part of humans to manipulate the system. And when I say overt, I don't necessarily mean that they realize what they're doing. What I do mean is that they are determined to protect their manipulation of the system, and they use the system to protect themselves. Sinful desire is what leads people to corrupt the present order of doing and thinking. They've transformed it into a structure that protects their sinful interests. And what Peter is saying is that because we have these promises which orient us toward the future, and because we have this gift of the divine nature, we have, in a certain sense, been placed outside of the system, not physically. I mean, bodily, we're still in the system as neutral. But certainly, there is some aspect of us that is oriented outside of the system, and that definitely removes us from the system insofar as the system is used as a mechanism to protect lust and to defy God. At least it ought to. However, well, I'll come to that in a moment. Let me say this. Because, as consistent believers, we don't fit the system, this world has a particular perspective toward us. We see that perspective in John's Gospel. Let me read just a couple of passages from John's Gospel. John 7:7, Jesus says, "The world, cosmos, cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it, and the works thereof are evil." Okay? At this point, this is early in John's Gospel, Jesus is, so to speak, the buffer zone between his disciples and the world. But then we come to John 15, just before the crucifixion, John 15, verses 18 and 19. Jesus now goes on. In John 7, he says, "The world hates me." Okay, at this point, Jesus was the one who was standing out and defying the world in all of its depravity. Jesus says, "If the world hates you," John 15:18, "you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own, but because you are not of the world, I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you." Don't be surprised when, as a consistent believer, you discover that those people who are attempting to manipulate systems of this world in order to protect their own expressions of depravity and in order to advance their own defiance of God, don't be surprised when those people hate you. I mean, Jesus couldn't be more plain at this point. Probably the most extended discussion dealing with this use of the term world, although it also includes other uses of the term world, but probably the most extended discussion is in John 17, in Jesus' high priestly prayer. Let me just read some selected parts of this. Starting in verse 11, Jesus says, "And now I am no more in the world." Why? Well, because he's about to die, be raised again, and ascend, so that he won't even be in the imminent order anymore. He has been during his humiliation. Now he's about to be outside of it. "But these are in the world," he says. He's talking about us. He's leaving us here in the present order. "And I come to thee. Holy Father, keep through thine own name those whom thou hast given me, that they may be one as we are. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in thy name. Those that thou gavest me I have kept, and none of them is lost but the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled. And now I come to thee, and these things I speak in the world," I'm still here, I'm saying these things now, "in order that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them thy word, and the world hath hated them because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world." Now we're dealing with the ethical sense of the term world. "I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world." Jesus deliberately leaves us in the world. "But that thou shouldest keep them," literally, "from the evil one." Actually, it's a form of tereo ek here, that you would keep them out of the evil one. The only other time we find this construction showing up is in Revelation 3:10, and by the way, that's highly relevant, but I'm not going to get on that rabbit trail right now. Jesus is saying, "I'm leaving them in the world. I'm not asking you, Father, to take them out of the world. I am asking you to keep them out of the evil one. And remember, the evil one is the one who rules the present order. Verse 18, as thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. We are supposed to be in the world. Now, by the way, please notice, being in the world is not a command that we're supposed to obey. Being in the world is a description of our actual condition. We have no choice. We are in the world. There's nowhere that we can go on earth and be out of the world. Okay? So often you hear evangelicals talking as if being in the world is something we're supposed to go out and do. No, it's something that describes the way we are. We are in the world. It's not that we're supposed to be in the world. We are in the world. What we're not supposed to be is of the world. And here Jesus is praying for protection for us from the world. He leaves us in the imminent order, but he prays for us to be kept out of the evil one. Even though we exist in the imminent order, we don't owe our perspectives and assumptions or even our life to the present order of things. We're sent into the imminent order to represent the transcendent order. And because of that, we're going to be hated, especially by people who have co-opted the imminent order and are attempting to use it against God. Of course, Romans 12:2 gives us another classic use of the term world. Be not conformed to this world, this cosmos, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. What Paul is saying here is that we must not allow the present anti-God system of perspectives and assumptions to press us into its mold. 2 Corinthians 4:4, in whom the God of this world, this Ion, has blinded the minds of them that believe not, lest the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. Okay, this set of misperceptions, of misconceptions that dominates and guides the world, there's a satanic element to this. It's not simply that people have made these things up. People aren't merely acting out of their own depravity, although they are doing that. But there is also a satanic element of deception and instigation that enters into the process of moving from the neutral idea of world as the order of things through world as neglect of eternal to world as hostility to the things of God. Galatians 1:4 tells us that Jesus gave himself for our sins that he might deliver us from this present evil world. Again, that's Ion. According to the will of God. So the present order, dominated by depraved perspectives, is evil. We're told that specifically. It's labeled as evil, but we have been delivered from it. Ephesians 2:2, wherein in time past you walked according to the course, that's Ion, of this world, that's cosmos. The Ion of this cosmos. Probably we could render that something like the spirit of the age. When we were unsaved, Paul says, we patterned our lives according to the habits of mind and heart and action that dominated depraved humanity. These things were systematically communicated to us, and we didn't even question them. That changes with new life. Ephesians 6:12 talks about the rulers of the darkness of this world, the cosmocrats. In other words, spiritual rulers dominate the spiritual darkness that pervades the present order and turn it against God. In terms of what all of this means for us, we get several poignant statements late in the New Testament, and by late in the New Testament, I mean late in terms of the way the books are laid out. One of them actually comes very early in terms of the writing of those books. Another comes a couple more come very, very late. One of the earliest statements in the New Testament, late in terms of the sequence of the books, is James 4:4. You adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. To the extent that we position ourselves as friends of the perspectives and behaviors that oppose God, that are being advanced through this system, to that extent, we also position ourselves as God's enemies. 1 John 5:4, one of the latest documents of the New Testament. For whatsoever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that overcomes the world, even our faith. I take that to mean, by the way, that if we are genuinely living with our hearts and minds in the transcendent order, that represents the overcoming of the world. Who is he that overcometh the world, but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God? Part of our salvation consists in this overcoming of the world. John 2:15. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away and its lusts. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. It's possible for a believer to love the present order, to love the present order even as it is a defense of depravity and a defiance of God. But if we do love the present order, that is deadly to us. We must not become enchanted with the structures that people erect, whether they're social or intellectual or political or whatever, in order to protect their own sinful perspectives and behaviors. And then John 3:13. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hate you. The ethical use of the term world. Now that leads us to the question, what is worldliness? I don't have the time to answer that right now, but I will talk about it tomorrow.